Blog Talk Radio.
From the deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, the SRI Label Group, Wildlife Educational Services, and Blog Talk Radio present Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover with us the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we discover his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. Welcome to Larry Batson's Wild World here on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. We're very, very excited. Of course, this was the date that the Woodstock Festival happened 50 years ago, and it's hard to believe. So in celebration of that, and I wish I could take credit for planning this, but I cannot. But Juma Salton will be with us in a little bit, the percussionist for Jimi Hendrix, so we're very, very excited. And from the Wild World Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always punctual, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, doctor, or afternoon, doctor, sorry.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Batson. Are the alligators enjoying this weather?
You know, I was out talking to the alligators, and people say that's strange, but I absolutely do that. And they were quite happy with this weather that we're enjoying right now. It's 85 degrees, sunshine, no rain. They're out basking in the sun. You know what an alligator does, Dr. Day, when they get too hot, when they're laying out in the sun?
They have to cool off.
Well, do you know specifically what they do?
Open their mouth.
Very good. You get a shiny new dime. My gosh, Doc, you're hot today. But
I do the same thing.
Now I think about it. And I'm looking at our bears, and they're sitting in their trough bathing. Wish I could almost join them. I mentioned that last week. We're more excited about talking with Mr. Salton here on Wild World today. Are you ready?
I am. Pretty excited.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's August 19th, 2018. The year is flying by. Let's get on to the news so we can get on with our guest today. We're pretty excited about it. All right, now, Cape Cod Beach, where a New York man was bitten by a shark, has been indefinitely closed to swimming after more sharks were reported in the area. Yeah, we got sharks being bad. We got a lot of animals being bad this week. Now, the beach near the tip of Cape Cod Peninsula was closed after William Linton, 61, of Scarsdale, New York, was hospitalized Wednesday with puncture wounds to his torso and legs.
Well, it hasn't been like the Woodstock Festival. No peace and love in the animal kingdom this week, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, and it gets worse.
We're oh, my.
Beach, a 42-year-old man has been treated for puncture wounds to his leg after being bitten by a shark there. And his injuries weren't life-threatening, but it is really no fun to be bitten by a shark.
Well, you know, it's not a party. That's for sure. So, you know, there may be somebody out there who enjoys it. I don't know.
Now, if I'm on the beach and I hear somebody yell shark, I'm running towards the water because that is a very tasty treat from the ocean.
You know, you've said that before, and I believe I've enjoyed shark steak from time to time. It's almost the consistency of beef, except, of course, it has a fishy flavor. But, I've enjoyed it as well.
But it's hard to shark fish here in Indiana, so I don't do that anymore. All right, you're in trouble. Dolphin Island, Alabama. A reward is being offered for help identifying anyone who removed eggs from a protected shorebird nesting site. Now, it's best to turn yourself in because we will find you.
And how will they do that?
Well, you know, with the science we have today, it's amazing what they can do. So, turn yourself in. It'll be a lot easier on you. All right, we got more animals being bad. Boulder, Colorado. A mountain lion broke into a house and became trapped inside. Yeah, it wasn't a pretty sight. Now, unfortunately, while the mountain lion was inside the house, it killed the cat, and the officials finally figured out, well, let's just open the doors, and the cat ran out.
How smart does it have to be?
All right, we got the next two stories from Connecticut. Bristol, Connecticut, a bear entered Crazy Bruce's liquor store after triggering an automatic outer door. The bear came in, an employee got behind an inner door, and eventually the bear left because everything was overpriced.
You know, I have a bear story that we were doing a show up in Cleveland, Ohio, many, many years ago, and we were walking the bear behind the stage, and someone had left a full beer. And the bear went up and grabbed a cup and drank that full beer in about 10 seconds. And here he comes. I could tell by his walk that there was something going on. And the guy that I was working with, all he said to me, he says, "It's drunk." And that beat the hell out of me for the 15 minutes I lectured about it. I was like, my gosh.
Yep, some animals just aren't good drugs.
No.
All right, back to Connecticut.
I'm with you.
All right, back to Connecticut, Norwalk, Connecticut. The Maritime Aquarium there is asking boaters on the Long Island Sound to slow down after the deaths of two turtles this last month. So if you're out boating, having fun, think about the environment and watch out for turtles.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
All right, Mr. Betson, you're going to like this. Three king cobras are among the more than 300 reptiles seized from a home in all Allegheny, New York.
That just doesn't.
Now, you've handled cobras before. That's not a animal that amateurs should mess with.
No. Well, any type of venomous snake is left to the professionals, I guess. Done it for 47 years. Cobras are exciting. I was 300. Man, that's a lot of snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had to have a distinctive odor when they walked into the room.
Oh, yeah. Yep, if you've never been around snakes before, they do have a distinctive odor. That wouldn't have been pleasant at all.
Well, you know, in Africa, the people that live there actually live in the backcountry. They claim they can smell snakes, so the snake collectors actually pay these young men to go out to the field in these tall grasses and help them assist them in finding snakes to collect because they smell them.
Well, interesting enough, I have a cat that will show me when there's a snake in the yard.
I had a dog that way, too. That is interesting enough, don't you?
All right, now we're off to Swan Quarter, North Carolina. Now, we need some help with this one. Now, let's do some write-ins. Use your email, whatever. Hyde County is allowing 20 hunters to go after alligators in a response to an overpopulation problem.
Really?
Yeah. What? Yeah. Now, as we know, nature has a way of taking care of itself when there's an overpopulation problem. If you want to go out and shoot, take a camera with you. Take pictures.
Yeah, no kid. It's amazing.
All right, now, we don't know. Did you hear about this? Colorado Springs, Colorado last week, the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo has remained open days after a hailstorm killed at least 5 animals.
Oh, that's, my gosh. You said it was a bad week for animals.
Yeah, just, you know, just some more sad stories. Now, we can't tell you what the animals are yet because the relatives haven't been notified.
You're hot today, Dr. Day.
Yeah, well, let's get on with this so we can get our guest on today. Let's see, for you people out in Wyoming, you can breathe a little easier now. At Cody, Wyoming, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department captured and released the two grizzly bears that have been roaming around town there. So So you can let the animals back out and just still keep an eye on them.
What about the children?
Well, you know, what do you want to do, send them to college?
Yeah. You're quick today, Don. My God.
All right. District of Columbia, sad news. The National Zoo has had to euthanize Alex the tortoise. He was around 100 years old and unfortunately wasn't doing well, so. But don't worry.
Well, again, maybe we should have a moment of silence for Alex.
Let's do that.
All right. Starting now.
All right.
Okay, moment's over.
All right. Some of my old stomping grounds. Cape Coral, Florida, a bone fragment that could be as much as 2.6 million years old was uncovered by crews working on a project there. Now, the city plans to donate the bone, which may have belonged to a mastodon or a mammoth. They're still doing a little research on that, but that's always fun to find something like that.
Oh,
all right,
cool.
Well, it's time to play Who's Gotten Older.
Oh, I hate this game.
You ready, Yuma?
Okay, I'm ready. Yes, I am.
He's ready.
All right, top of our list, one of my favorites from the Crosby, Stills, Nash, David Crosby. How old do you think David got this past week?
Go ahead, Juma.
74.
I'll play the prices right. I'll do 73.
Well, David actually turned 77 on Tuesday.
Oh, Juma wins. Already, I hate him.
Well, yeah, unbelievable. And is still putting it out.
Yeah.
Now one of all of our favorites, actor, musician, Steve Martin.
What do you think, Juma?
65.
I'll say 70.
Well, Mr. Batson, you're a little closer this time. Steve turned 73 on Tuesday.
Okay.
I still hate this game.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You're lucky to play. I've only got a couple of celebrities, so it won't last long.
Oh, good.
All right. Now, one of my favorites, Belinda Carlisle of the Go-Go's.
Oh, that's a hard one. I'll go first. I'll say 49.
I'll say 54.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to give this one to Yuma because she turned 60, believe it or not. I saw her not too long ago. She looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you have your glasses on?
Yes, I think I did.
Yeah, good.
Belinda's doing fine.
Yeah.
All right. I threw this one in just because Danny Bonaducci.
I say I don't care.
And I say, I don't know.
I say, I don't care either, so we'll never know. No, Danny turned 59 this past week.
59.
All right, a little tidbit from Memphis, Tennessee. A new exhibit at Graceland is titled Lisa Marie Presley, Growing Up Presley. Ah.
Juma,
yeah.
Let's go.
That's kind of what I said. All right,
yeah.
Let's finish this up. Let's do our fact of the day, and we'll get on with this show. All right, now, before you go to sleep tonight, I want you to think about this. Slugs have four nostrils. Yes. And also, nearly 3% of the ice in the Antarctic glaciers is penguin urine. And that's the Wild World News for August 19th.
Well, again, a great job by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. All HD and that knotty pine paneling really helps the acoustics, Dr. Day. That's fantastic.
Well, it's N-A-U-G-H-T, knotty pine.
Oh, that's why. The SRI label group is our under Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. The SRI label group is for people that love all music, rock, jazz, blues, country. It's all there, artists and their classic recordings. Best of ELO, Little Richard Live, Chambers Brothers, Hall & Oates, a catalog of thousands of recordings available for download or just to listen to. Explore an amazing music collection at the best musical site, the SRI Label Group. Check it out today, srirecords.com.
SRI Jazz is proud to present their newest release, This is Ray Brown Jr. That's right, Ella Fitzgerald's son continues to entertain audiences with his warm and charming vocals, making this one of the best vocal jazz albums of the year. Here are some sample tracks from the album. Visit our website to hear all of them in their entirety. Just go to srirecords.com or click on the banner in your media player now.
It's wonderful, marvelous. You should care for me. Awful nights, paradise, what I love to see. My baby, when she walks by, all the fellas go, I know why. Simply 'cause that girl's so fine. If she'd ever leave me, I'd lose my mind. She's got the kind of loving, kissing and a hugging. Sure, he's mellow. Glad that I'm a fella, and I know, 'cause she knocked me off my feet. Have mercy on me. I know for certain, one I love. I'm through with flirting. It's you that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love. Oh, you must take the A-train to go to Sugar Hill, way up in Arlington.
You've been listening to a few sample tracks from the new album, This is Ray Brown Jr. You can hear all the songs in their entirety at srirecords.com. Support jazz music today at srirecords.com. Consideration provided by SRI Jazz.
Sounding pretty good. Ray Brown here on Blog Talk Radio. 50 years since the Weekend of Peace and Love became the historical event known as the Woodstock Music Festival. It became a cocoon to a butterfly in upstate New York. Rock's biggest acts came to Woodstock to be headlined by Jimi Hendrix. His new group of musicians would become Gypsy Sun and Rainbows, or as Jimmy put it, simply a band of gypsies. The group consisted of Mitch Mitchell on drums, Billy Cox on bass, and a conga player, as Jimmy put it, wearing those purple pants, Juma Sullivan. Join us as we visit with Juma and talk past and present of Juma's world as the spirit of Hendrix joins us on a very special Wild World. Good afternoon, Juma. Great to have you on the show.
Oh, good afternoon. Pleasure to be here today.
We feel so blessed. Go ahead.
I just want to fill in. You left out a couple other. You left out Larry Lee on guitar, and Gerardo Velez was also on congas with the Gypsy Sun and Rainbows. You don't want to forget them. Gerardo's the living. Larry Lee passed maybe 15 years ago.
Okay. Well, I looked at that. I said, that doesn't sound right. My rock history sometimes is a little muddy. But
okay. I just wanted to fill in the gap.
Just like Dr. Day, we want to be factual all the time.
Right.
So what was the Woodstock Festival for you, Juba? I mean, gosh, what an amazing event. Couldn't happen again, I don't think.
No, it hasn't happened since, and I'm not even sure it'll happen again anytime soon. It was an amazing event because I have to quote many people that were there, like the person that opened, Richie Havens, he was a very good friend. I met him on Stroud Plaza in Berkeley, California, around 1965. But he opened it, he was there, and he just passed away a couple of years ago. But his take on it was our take on it, that it was a lot of distortion. A lot of things are coming to effect because it was about brotherhood, peace, and love. It wasn't just about how the press represented it, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There was plenty of that there, but it wasn't just that. It was about people coming together, and unfortunately, probably the grassroots was the so-called hippie generation of, you know, because they were the flower children. They were ushering in all over the country, you know, and they were opposed to a lot of things. But it also brought people together in a community fashion. And that's what Woodstock, to me, represented. It represented a community of, you know, close to a quarter million people, just a community that came together under a banner of, you know, peace, love, and music. I mean, those were the essentials. So to me, it was fulfilling a certain dream at that time because there were so many struggles. There was war. There was civil rights. There were just so many people that put their personal struggles and predilection aside and came together, and it was a beautiful thing.
There was kind of a spirit that just floated through that whole festival, wasn't there?
Oh yeah. But it wasn't just the festival itself. It was a major because people came under a banner of love from all over the country and practically all over the world. And so yes, there was a prevalent spirit that was very strong, you know, at that time.
Tell our listeners how you met Jimmy the first time and how this all came about becoming this band for the Woodstock Festival.
Well, it wasn't the first time, but, you know, the band, Jimmy and I had crossed paths a number of times before 1969. But in the spring of 1969, I was in Woodstock, you know, sitting on a bench called the Woodstock Green. And Jimmy walked by with his manager. And we recognized each other from the past and started talking. And he said, I'm putting the band together for Woodstock. Would you like to come up to the house and jam? And he was by himself, and it was just him and myself for about 3 days. And he was staying at the Navarro Hotel in, you know, across from Central Park. And while he was here, we hung out. And he said, I like the area. And so he asked his manager to look around for properties. And eventually, about a month later, found property up in Boyceville at the end of Treble Hollow Road. It was an old English manor house with a farmhouse and caretakers and horses and cows. And it was just a beautiful, in a beautiful valley. And he liked that. He looked at a number of other places. He looked at Johnny Werner's place across in Rhinebeck, which was like a studio, but he didn't like that, and a few other places up in Big Indian, you know, nice houses, and he settled for that one. And he settled in, and, he tried a number of musicians. I mean, we did a lot of jamming there before Billy Cox and Larry Lee came up from down south. And he brought in Gerardo Velez, another conga player. And that was the beginning of the Gypsy Sun and Rainbows. There was a lot of things that happened in between there. Like there was a bootleg record. Mike Jimmy and Juma, some guy recorded one of the sessions and went to Jamaica and pressed it. And there were a lot of, you know, crazy things happened, you know, during that period. But that was the beginning of the Gypsy Suns and Rainbows, you know, at that time. And
I'm sorry.
No, I was just to say he tried on a number of different musicians. He was very happy with Billy Cox. He was very happy having a rhythm guitar player, which freed him up to do different sounds in the development. There wasn't a lot of rehearsal time with the full band because Mitch didn't come in until probably the last 2 to 3 weeks before the concert because he was looking for another drummer, and he tried out a number of different people, all the way from Philip Wilson with Butterfield Band who, at that time, and different drummers. But he really he really was searching for another drummer, but he found that he couldn't find what he wanted, and he had Mitch come back. And Mitch agreed to come back because they were, you know, the the experience had, you know, broken up at that time, and they weren't really thinking about getting back together. The management would have loved it, and that's really what they really wanted. They didn't really want the what Jimmy was growing into.
Jimmy, I always had the feeling he seemed like such a wonderful person, a beautiful person. And he didn't really enjoy the business part of the music operation at all. He just wanted to play music.
That's pretty much what it is. He wanted to be more creative, and the management wanted him to just you know, continue with what was making the, you know, the $1 million, you know, with the experience, go in the studio and a repetition. You know, you go on tour and you come up with a few new songs and you keep moving. And he was tired at that point. In fact, people call it a nervous breakdown, but no, it was just basically road weary. That if you look at the short period of time that he did so many different concerts, and at the same time, he loved to play. And so wherever he was at, if he was in England, if he was anywhere, he would play with local musicians and different people just to jam and just to bring in new creative ideas. And he was very open. But as a person, he was not totally, you could say, gregarious, but he was shy, but he was open. And once you made a connection, he was a very caring person, you know. He was, and that was part of his problem too, because some people took advantage of it. Other people were great, you know. And he, you know, he had great relationships. He had a good relationship with guys like Buddy Miles, because he knew, you know, Buddy. He didn't, for his own personal reasons, he did not want Buddy to be part of the Gypsy Sun and Rainbows. You know, exactly why, I'm not certain, but I know that Buddy used to call the house, and he wanted to be part of that group, but it wasn't in Jimmy's plan, because I think Jimmy was going into a different direction, which later on turned out wonderful when with the band of Gypsies, after the Gypsy Sun and Rainbows. I think that they laid down some straight blues and R&B that was great. But I think he, at that time, he was more interested in the fusion and, you know, different areas of music, of sound.
What were these? I know they're practice sessions, but as you mentioned earlier, I think they were more just jams. What were they like in that house? I mean, what was, like, the schedule? What did they consist of? Give us some idea what it was like to play with.
It was pretty open, because at that time, you know, everyone was pretty individualistic, but there were times when you say, okay, you know, Wednesday, you know, from 3 to 9, we have to get together, you know, and, you know, people were in and out, even including Jimmy, you know. We all had other places, but that was the group house, and many of us were closer than others. You know, I know that some people were based out of New York City. Once Billy and Larry came in from Nashville and Memphis, you know, people were in the house all the time. You know, there was a cook there, there was a housekeeper, and there was a family that lived in the house, not far in the back, and they took care of the horses and the cows and any other chickens, wildlife. They had back there like a farm, just beyond the manor house, which was great, you know. And so they could caretake, you know, it was good. But it was a beautiful time, you know. And it was a time when, you know, when we spent time there, we knew that it was a place where you could go up and relax. And also, it was conducive to being creative because of the valley and how it was situated. And, no complaints from the neighbor, because you took up the whole valley, and so the noise was not going outside, and you could play outside on the deck at 110 decibels, and it would just bounce against the mountain. It was like a beautiful time, and it was coming together. But it wasn't a lot of rehearsal, and that's why even when you look at Woodstock, he'll let you know that that the group was fledgling, but it was just a few rehearsals. So he almost called it a jam too. And but the material we had already practiced, but not for never perfected, but, to develop to the extent that he was happy with.
What a fantastic jam!
Well,
yeah.
I think Jimmy
back at the house.
Oh, back at the house. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Jimmy liked perfection, did he?
I think Jimmy was always striving for perfection. I would not say he didn't like perfection. I would say that in his own mind, he never achieved perfection.
Well, I can remember.
There was always more. There was a higher degree,
Yeah, I can remember Chaz Chandler talking about how many takes it would make of a particular song or guitar thing Jimmy would do.
Well, that's because, see, Jimmy was not a trained writer, and he was always looking for different sounds. And so every take from 1 to 51 is different, and he was sensitive to it. Now, so many producers, some of them are and some of them aren't. But, and you get guys that are there, one take, bang, that's it, because, you could do 50, and it's going to be little small changes on every, on every note, So
sure,
But he was always looking for a greater sound, and he was great at doing that. But he was not allowed the opportunity. Otherwise, Jimmy would have been able to deal with an orchestra. And I only said that to say that he was composing in the studio. So that's basically what my thought was.
I'm sure that you heard guitar riffs or licks that would later become songs, I assume.
Oh, for sure. And for sure, and ideas from one layered on to the next. And, that was the thing about being able to overdub if you don't have, a system like they have now where you can lay tracks. But it's not the same as having, live musicians play the music, because you'll have to differentiate between, is it real or Memorex, I guess.
Was he, this is probably a really stupid question, but was he your favorite musician that you ever played with?
Was he my favorite musician that I ever played with?
Yeah. I knew it was a stupid question.
I believe was the greatest, okay?
Yeah.
The most favorite musician. It's like asking me, I have 7 children, about 20 grandchildren, and about 4 great-grandchildren.
Oh,
so if you ask me, who's the favorite? It's a difficult question. I'd say he was the greatest. And, and as he said, it was a wonderful experience. So within that, of what the experience there, I would have to put it in that respect.
Sure. What was the feeling like before you went onto the stage at Woodstock and performed that memorable concert? What was that like?
Okay, well, it's a long story. We arrived about 10 o'clock in the evening. We're supposed to go on at midnight. So what happened then was that we were cordoned off to Yazger's house, expecting to go on at midnight. We get to midnight, and we find out that we're not going on until 6 o'clock in the morning. So when you ask me what the experience was, we just utilized that time and everybody individually. And it was in that environment, it was, I could say, different. That's one of my definitions, but it's a pretty broad stroke. It's pretty broad stroke. so to define, what it was like before we played, I know that by the time we played, we were more than ripe and ready, and with the energy. And as you said, it was a different occasion. And many people left, but what was there was it was an amazing experience. And so all in all, and so it went from I can't remember down to go up and down. I don't remember going down. It just seemed like it was going up, up, up. And here we are. Here's the sunrise. And here we are playing music. So it was a beautiful thing. That's my short term.
Well, I wonder if there was any photographs. Did Jimmy hang out, chat with Max any? That would have been fantastic.
This is probably the wealth of photograph, you know, but access to them. People have, I saw so many cameras and so much film, and I saw so many activities. And some of it has surfaced, and like many other things, so much have ended up in the garbage. So we don't know what is there. It was dark. I remember when Jeffrey brought Mac over to over to the house. There were no photos, you know. Maybe some. There was no phones, you know, like this Instagram or whatever, instant photos, and none of that in those days, you know. So I'm not sure that anything like that exists.
I couldn't even imagine if that would happen now with social media. How big that really would. I mean, it was immense anyway.
There's collectors all over the world that have, like, for instance, at Woodstock, an experience was that what's his name? I can't remember his name. The engineer, he didn't like the sound, so he turned the mics off, the congas, and one of the guitars, he turned it down off, and at different times. You know, we were playing, and you couldn't hear us play except through the PA, you know, a little bit. And so there's collectors that have the original tracks from the trailer and on and on. So the stuff gets surfaced, you know, it's just a matter of looking up. So if you had concepts or ideas, you might be able to find what you need, but it takes resources, as you know, just like this program.
Was it Kramer, who was the engineer for the Woodstock Festival?
Yeah, that's who it was. Eddie Kramer, correct. Yeah, Eddie Kramer.
And
Eddie Kramer. Go ahead.
And you recorded with Jimmy, and I assume Eddie was the engineer for those recordings or producers.
On some of them, and others he weren't. I'm on about 12 recordings with Jimmy, or 12 releases or so, and he wasn't the engineer on all of them. No.
Did Jimmy have a different personality when he was in the studio versus when he was just like, let's say, at the house? I mean, was it all business?
No. That's one thing I loved about Jimmy. I mean, I'd be around people that fluctuate, and so I like people that are not just particularly just them, but it's always comforting to be around someone that their moods don't vacillate a lot. You know, go up and down. They're pretty much. You meet them today, and they're the same person tomorrow. You know, or later on today. You know, you meet them, and they're the same person. And people have a way of mood shifts. And he, you know, we all go through our changes. But he was pretty consistent. So I appreciated that about him, especially being on the level that they put him on at that time. You know, he was the guy at that time. And he wasn't ego driven, and he wasn't money driven, you know. And that was unique for someone of that stature.
Well, his spirit, I think, got him where he was because, and I've always heard so much about his sense of humor.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we all like encompass one of those, you know. So. He had a great sense of humor.
You know, I was thinking back to 1964 and Dr. Day. I've always wondered, you know, Dave Davies from the Kinks inspired so many guitar players. And I assume did as well, Dr. Day.
All right, let me check and see if we got Dave on the line. Dave, are you listening? Yeah, I'm here. Were you listening to the question, Dave? I heard a little bit of it. I couldn't really tell what he's talking about. I was thinking about something else.
Yeah, it was 1970, I think, when the song Lola came out, somewhere around 1970. And I remember we were at a bar playing, before we wrote that song, and our manager danced with this beautiful girl all night. Well, it didn't turn out to be a girl, and that's where Lola came from.
That's so unfortunate.
He's still pissed about that today.
Well, he should be.
Thank you, Dave. Let me find out for the question.
Oh, I couldn't find the button.
Okay.
Apologize for that so much, Juma.
You never know with
Dave.
No,
that's good.
You never know.
Yeah, Dave Davies has been a friend of the show for so long, and he does like to call in and put in his two cents if he's not fighting with his brother Ray. That's always a problem. As well.
Yeah.
That's right. It could be an issue. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're not only a fantastic percussionist, but you're also a bass player, which I didn't know till today when I was reading some public relations information regarding Juma.
Oh, yeah. Well, I came to New York as a bass player. I was playing jazz bass. I started playing bass in Topanga Canyon, and I graduated to the Haight-Ashbury days, and I was up in Berkeley and San Francisco and Big Sur, and all through that period, during that period. And I came to New York with a saxophone player, Sonny Simmons, very prolific saxophone player. And he and I and Paul Smith and Barbara Donnell, we had a quartet. And, that's when I moved to Third Street. There was a lot of activity here. I'm located, by the way, in Woodstock presently.
Right.
And I'm here. And as I tell people, Woodstock is known for rock and roll, but there's an underground here. There's always been other musicians that play so many other genres of music from everybody knows about Dylan and bluegrass and folk, and they don't know that there's been a heavy stream of jazz, bossa, standard, progressive, avant-garde. I mean, ever since I've been here, and I showed up here in 1967, and it's still going on, and it's still happening. And so, but just like the Woodstock Festival, is that the news and emphasis is on the commercial and the mainstream, basically. But there's people here that live here, that travel around the world, and you leave this hub, and they're known, and they're very well known, and they're able to raise families, and it's a beautiful place.
Oh my gosh! And the festival side, I guess, is a regular tourist mecca.
Well, see, when you realize that the festival itself happens 60 miles away in Bethel, New York. You'll find that this hamlet is different. And just like today, it is a tourist attraction, but there are points to get away. And also there's a lot of development going on, and it's changing faces. I saw in the 60s where the farmers were complaining about the artists, and I've seen now. And now the artists are complaining about the new rich that's coming in buying all the property. That's what it's called. I don't know. I observe it like politics. I don't want to speak on it. I just observe it. I'll let it be. Right. Anyway. But it's a beautiful place to be. Yeah, it's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah, I've been up there several times in Syracuse and Rochester. And all times of the year, too. The winter's a little tough, but...
You got to come down to the Catskills, so you're a little high up, see. So if you come down a little further south from Syracuse, another 2-3 hour drive, you'll be in the country where I'm at. But anyway, if you have any more things that you'd like to know about Woodstock, I'd like to share with you. I really appreciate what you guys do, and I just need to have the time to follow you a little more closer, because I'm you know, very interested in nature and how we're treating nature like we're treating everything else in the world. sometimes not in the proper fashion, you know. So anyway,
we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
Thank you. That's what it is. Back to the garden. And I appreciate what you guys do. And I'm happy to be here. And I'm happy to, you know, be here and honored to be on your program as a guest.
Well, what kind of animals do you see around your place there, Juma?
Oh, well, let's see. Well, I just came back from Maine. I was there doing a workshop. I'll go from Maine. I just came back from Maine. And, you know, all I saw was deer, snakes. Lobsters, and birds.
Oh,
here where I'm at, where I'm in Bear Country. You know, I mean, we had a lady come in the Bear went in her house and just a couple of weeks ago before I left, entered the house and she locked herself in the bedroom. Different stuff. You know, but we got bears crossing the road. We got deer. We got everything. I mean, you talk about turtles, you know, frogs. You know, you got everything down here. Beavers, I even seen what are the little black lynx? What are those things that live on this in the hole? They look like mink, shiny black.
Otters.
Otters. They're like little beautiful, beautiful skin. You know, there's all kind of things around. So
we've
wildlife.
Got a from the 574 area code that we're gonna hook up here with. Hello, 574.
Hello.
Would this sound like the voice of London Smith?
Yes.
London, we have on the phone. I'm sorry, London. We have on the phone probably one of the most well-known percussionists in the world. And I know you're only in the third grade. You too are also a drummer. Juma Sultan, say hi to Juma there, London.
Hello.
Yeah, hello, hi. London. How are you? So how old are you? Good. How old are you, London? Yeah, how old are you? Good. Yeah. I'm good too.
Eight.
Okay. I have a grandson who plays saxophone. He just turned 11 though. Okay, so that's right. He's been playing since he was in the third grade. You're a drummer?
Yeah.
Right. How long have you been playing?
I've been playing since I was 3.
Oh, okay. I love that. I love to hear that. So you're a natural. Okay. Good. So did you have a question? Don't make it too technical.
What's your favorite show that you've ever played in?
The most favorite show that I ever played in was the Woodstock Festival in 1969.
Are you familiar with that, London?
Who'd you play with?
I played with Jimi Hendrix. It was Jimi Hendrix, the Gypsy Sons, and Rainbows. We were the last act. We closed the festival on Monday morning. The festival was supposed to end Sunday night, but it went on till Monday morning.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it was good. I agree. All right.
You know.
Okay. Well, thank you for your question. Go ahead.
Anything else, Lynn?
Hello.
Hi. I'm good.
All right. Be well, London. Good talking.
All right. London's a man of few words.
All right.
Great. That's fantastic. Juma, we're going to take a short break here. You don't have to leave us, do you?
Very soon. I have other commitment. Yes. But I'll take the break. I'll wait till you come back and we'll tie it up, okay?
We'd like to play from the SRI label group. Do you like Al Jarreau?
Oh, yeah, I love Al. Oh, yeah.
He did an album it's a very rare album where he covered songs by Al Green.
Oh yeah.
Well, are you familiar? Well,
he's I'm familiar with it, but I love his later stuff, his most recent stuff, where he's done a lot of great teaching in terms of vocal and voice, in a way, you know. So I love Al Green, and I love Al Jarreau, so I'm open ears. All right.
Charts. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio. Our special guest here today, Jim Assaulton, here on Wild World.
Yes, he did. You're correct. Yes.
Oh, well, I'm not correct very often.
Yeah.
So what?
Okay.
What now? I know you're playing, so we want to tell all of our listeners what Juma's World is all about today.
Presently, I don't have a band together. I do some things here locally in the New York area. You know, it's just Juma Assaulton and friends, and I have a group of musicians that I do play with. The last major band I was with was was an all-star band, which was the Chocolate Fudge and Rainbows, which featured Vinnie Martell, who's the he's still the lead guitar player and singer with Vanilla Fudge, who was touring
yeah.
on, and T.C. Tolliver, who was with Wendy O. Williams, and you know, T.M. Stephen, who played with everybody from James Brown to Aretha Franklin to Whitney Houston, even wrote a hit for her, you know. And it was a great band, you know, but things happened. It was called Chocolate Fudge and Rainbows, and we were doing a lot of things, and it could have had some wings, but it dissipated, that particular band. And that was the last major band that that I was with. But I do a lot of session work up here in the area because there's many studios up here. And so I do sessions work. And, you know, I play. I was in New York just a week or so ago playing. Plus, you know, I have a Ghanaian rhythms. I have a group, if you look online, called Sankofa. And we do village traditional village music and run drum circles and teach workshops in and out of schools. So that's just another thing that I enjoy doing, you know, presently. But if anyone wants to find out what I'm doing, go to my website. It's called jumasultan.net, and you'll find a progression of music that has happened since the 60s to present, because I'm building a site there, and I have, like, you know, different samples of music, and that's the only place where you can get it. But you can get one of my first release. I did an album. It's a double vinyl, and it's on Amazon. It's called Father of Origin, and it's on Amazon. It was a collector's edition. It's a double vinyl, 27-page booklet explaining the history of the music with photos. And a complimentary CD. So, and you can find that. But they're just about gone presently. And, you know, if there's a, you know, maybe, you know, it's not going to be stressed again, you know, but, you know, it's just about gone. It's a collector's edition. You should look it up on online. But if you look up jumasultan.net, but I have an I'm an archivist also, and so I've been documenting music for years, and I'm in the process of working on a documentary film, which you know, I'm outlining right now. So if you go on to jumasarchive.org, I have some I received a grant from the National Endowment. I have some archives stored there, about 30 clips, films, verbal written history. Different things. So that's jumasultan.org, and that's out of Clarkson University. But other than that, I'm just, you know, staying busy, trying to slow down at this time and enjoy my family.
Well, you have such a wonderful spirit, and you're so giving and so kind to join us today. I have to tell you, Jimi Hendrix is one of my favorite artists, like many, many people. And to actually talk to someone so close to him and such a dear friend, I've had goosebumps this entire hour, to tell you the truth. You're just such a wonderful man. Part of this.
Well, great. Well, it was great sharing with you. And as Jimmy said, you know, the spirit lives. The spirit
it
lives.
Does.
And so I enjoyed this time with you. And that's what we can share in. You know, until we meet again.
All right. Absolutely. God love you. What a great show, Dr. Day.
Yes.
Okay.
Juma Sultan, you are experienced.
Yes, I am experienced, doctor. Okay. All right. You guys be well. I hope to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Larry Benson's Wild World with Dr. Henry Day on Blog Talk Radio. A truly magical night tonight, as we've enjoyed the company of a true great music artist and a true great contributor to music history, Juma Sultan. Dr. Day, next Sunday, 3 o'clock.
See you then.
All right. We're going to finish off with little Ray Charles tonight from the SRI label group. Eleanor Rigby, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Check out our Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. All animals, all fun. We'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio.